step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 430. I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm joined today by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We also stream this live at KOOP.org. Stay in your chairs. Don't go away.
Hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Okay. We had a little false alarm of a start for some reason. I don't know why, but no disc in the machine.
Which
by the way, was my which was my sorority name in college. No disc in the machine. It's true. You know what you didn't hear there was a little thing called random number generator from a little show called how Nicole pronounces it, Hedgewig and the Angry Inch. Because as I was putting music together today, I really didn't have an idea of what I wanted. So I typed in random and original cast, and that's what came up. We're going to end up the show with whatever.
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 That's
anyway, I would like to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful international folk bazaar.
Yes.
And that's folk with an L.
Yes.
Folk Bazaar. And I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for supporting Co-op in its fall membership drive, which just completed. We got very, very close to our aggressive goal, and that is in line with all the giving that everybody was asked to give with all the hurricanes, all the three hurricanes. Mm. And again, our hearts go out to all those people that had to deal with that. I know many of us here in the Austin area have friends and family that dealt with that. So that's it. I'm checking in with Nick Squared. How you guys doing?
Good.
Okay.
Nicole, you know, that was amazing.
It's not often that Nicole is that succinct in her answers.
I saw Art Acevedo run out on the football field Sunday. That was exciting. And the crowd went wild!
Did he make a home run?
No, he went out representing the first responders for the hurricane. And then right after that was J.J. Watt with the Texan flag, and that went wild, too.
Was this at intermission? Was it at intermission?
No, intermission was a really bad band.
I remember back in the old days, I used to second act football games all the time.
Me too, Lisa. me too.
So let's introduce the folks that are here. We have Julie Lenard. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
We have Holly Garrison.
Hello, hello.
We have Mr. Max Langert.
Hi.
Bonnie Cullum.
Hello.
Chad Salvada.
Hello.
And Ms. Melissa Vogt.
Hi.
Welcome, you guys. It feels kind of like old home week here with the forces of the Vortex Rep here. We feel like we're in a vortex of creativity.
Rep. Yeah. Repute.
So, you know, I'm just going to start everything out with some bummer stuff. We had two pretty incredible losses.
You know what? I was like, it's kind of a bummer of a week.
It's been a bummer of a week. So we're going to talk about, we lost two people that were pretty big in the theater industry. One huge, Peter Hall passed away.
Peter Hall, giant. Yeah.
He was 86. He created the Royal Shakespeare Company. RSC, as we like to call it in the business. And I just want to say there was a great quote that he said. He called himself a musical director of plays. And he said, you learn the notes, you learn the steps, you learn the shapes, and then one has to make it one's own and act it. And that was his philosophy as a director. And I loved how he considered it a musical director.
Very cool.
So,
at least she got two words that time. She went from good Two, very cool.
I think it's probably a good idea if you want to control Nicole, just don't put a microphone directly in front of her. Because to key our listeners, and we have a big crowd here today, so Nick Squared is sharing one microphone. And these microphones are very directional, so you have to be right in front of it.
Two Nicks, one mic.
Two Nicks, one mic.
We have
also my sorority name in college.
Me speechless on that one.
But anyway, so Peter Hall passed away due to complications of old age. He was 86. I believe it was pneumonia that was actually the actual cause. But he had a 9-page obituary in the New York Times. So
we're going to call that a pricey one, too.
Right. Right.
Oh, my yep. gosh.
Yep. And then the other person that passed away is Michael Friedman. And this is something that's really sad. Not only that we lost him, he's the creator of Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, amongst other things. And he died from complications from AIDS. And that is just something that we're not accustomed to hearing anymore. Uh-huh. He was 41 years old. And that is just so sad. And it's... the thing that struck me the most is that, you know, we spent the 80s and the early 90s hearing this all the time, and it would have just zoomed past us. Now we hear this and it is a shocker, and this was a shocker.
I was like, did I read that correctly? Because I honestly felt like I was in a time warp again. I was like, wait, what? And I was like, really? It kind of made me sadder that's what I'm still reading how many years later. I'm yep. like, really?
Yep. And love Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
Me too.
I mean, it's so not my type of music, but again, he did very much what Lin-Manuel Miranda did and found, it was a heavy metal rock opera versus a rock opera. I don't know, just, it had a, and still does. It's kind of, it has a very good ring to it when you see the show. And, he obviously, of course, did other things as well. He did The Fortress of Solitude at the Public in 2014, amongst other things. So he will definitely be missed.
Thought you were trying to say he built the Frost Tank Frost Bank Tower. Doesn't it look like The Fortress of Solitude? Oh.
I was trying to figure out where you were going with that.
It does. Tonight, look at the skyline and tell me it doesn't look like
a fortress. Well, tell me what the Fortress of Solitude actually
is. It's Superman's home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he throws. Don't you remember in the original movie, and he throws a little kryptonite, and then once he throws it, then the crystals start coming out of the ground. And
never saw it. I'm way too young to have seen that.
Yeah.
So the other little piece of unfortunate news we need to talk about, but also good at the reaction is good. When we have tragedies like we had this past 2 weeks with Harvey, then Jose, or Irma, and then Jose, of course, Jose didn't affect it. Those poor people in Barbuda who got hit twice in a week
with
Category 5 and then a Category 3. It's crazy. That was Jose. And Jose finally heard today it was threatening to go back to the East Coast. Today it decided, nope, I'm booking out of here.
Jose said no way.
But it does show when things like this happen, and lest I not mention it, it's the 16th anniversary of 9/11, but when these things happen, we really truly see the better nature of humanity. We really see the better nature of all of us, and that always makes me feel good. And that was very apparent last night, and there was a big concert to raise money for the hurricanes. As Nicole keeps reminding us, her boy J.J. Watt has raised $7 zillion.
Well over $30 million because he's...
Well, that's close to
J.J.
$7
J.J. Watt. You can look at the amount. I think he's got him on his Twitter.
Yeah,
he talks all the time.
Not something I'll probably do, but thank you. he's done a lot of really good things. But
so have a lot of other people.
That's true. Many,
like
many
the Michael
people.
Dell.
What did he give?
He did $36 million originally, and then last night during the telethon said he would match up to another $10
million. Oh, my.
Hello. Mr. Butt from HEB, how much has HEB done? And then he personally gave like another $5 million on top of everything he's done with his mobile relief. I mean, it's just, I could sit here and just name people all day long. It's amazing.
It is pretty amazing.
Sandra Bullock and Kenny Chesney and...
So the other thing that directly affects the theater community here in Texas is the Alley Theater, amongst the other theaters in Houston, were devastated. The Alley's 300-seat theater that is actually below grade, the water went up to the fifth row of seats in their six-row seating. So there's only six rows. And that was a pretty big deal. And one of the things that's really unfortunate, Rajiv Joseph, who was set to open a brand new play on September 15th in that theater, saw those dreams go up in smoke, or so he thought.
No, they didn't.
Well, I was you got to, I'm weaving a narrative here, Nicole Chiron. He did find out just a couple days ago that the University of Houston is offering a theater for them to perform in. It's interesting because they're opening like in 2 days. It was set for a space in the round, which is what the Alley's space is, and this is a proscenium. It's they had to build all new sets, stage everything, but everybody's jumping to it and getting it done.
And Lisa, that's so beautiful that to bring that to light as a community for them to stand behind that theater. How impressive that is!
Yeah,
and generous. Really is.
Luckily, they have when they were doing the remodeling a few years ago, they were able to work with U of H and use that space for a few shows. So they were really quickly the first one to kind of come to the aid. They're already working on the second show, Cleo. That's another world premiere, which with an Austin playwright, that is going into another space. So the community, the ballet is now going to be in the Hobby Center. So the community has really come together in an really amazing way.
Can I just say something on this, Lisa? Sorry. I think that there's plenty to learn from Houston's response to this. And other cities such as Austin and all of us can use this as a great example of how fellow theaters take care of each other.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we should acknowledge them and learn from that community. And what a wonderful thing. Thank you for telling me that. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
So thank you.
It was the arts community here when Ground Floor Theater was forced to close really, really quickly and we had a full season. A lot of other theaters stepped up to house some of the things that were in our space. So that it happens here as well. The other thing that is really bad, they had an undergrade 8,000 square foot prop storage facility, mm-hmm. which had decades and decades and decades of handmade props that are just gone. Now
everything,
yeah, and that's really, really sad. They're expecting that the damages could total as much as $15 million. The total price tag of the renovation they did was $45 million, so that's a quarter of that if I'm doing my math right,
on top of
a third of that if I'm doing my math right,
more than half the staff at the Alley was also personally
right.
affected,
yes.
and lost everything.
Absolutely.
On top of the theater.
True that. And then what I really love this, and I didn't print it out for some reason. I don't know why, so I don't know what theater it is. There's a theater in Houston that is now mounting a production of Harvey to aid Harvey victims, which I think is sort of cool.
Yeah, so...
And I believe they were already doing it. Yeah, it was running.
Oh,
before.
They were.
Yeah,
it was their like inaugural production too. It was like their first thing.
It was running before. It opened the week before Harvey hit, and then they decided since they were doing Harvey, they turned it all around and did the proceeds for it.
Cool. So that shows you how much I pay attention when I read my articles. So let's see. So now on to other things. We talked a little bit about this last week, but Angels in America with Nathan Lane is coming to America. And from across the pond, which is really awesome. So Angels in America, of course, everybody knows it is... oh my God, what's his name?
Tony Kushner.
Tony Kushner's, thank you. This is what happens when you get to be my age. Tony Kushner's two-part play, Perestroika is the second one, and the first one is, somebody help
Millennium
me.
Approaches.
Millennium Approaches. And it played in the West End to really great reviews, and it's coming over here. But here's an interesting thing that happens with Angels in America, and as well as M. Butterfly, which is also coming over here. It is much, much, much more expensive to produce in the United States on Broadway than it is to produce in the West End. And the producers of both of those productions are having a little sticker shock at how much they have to pay. And Michael Riedel did one of his articles, and the headline is, "Pricey Revivals Are Driving Broadway Producers Crazy." And he actually said that. But the thing about, I did not know this, the plays that just this last season, I got to remember which, Sweat, Indecent, and Significant Other, all lost money. So to recoup money on Broadway is really, really difficult. And there was a very interesting Broadway Talks episode this week with Michael Riedel talking to a producer, and I forgot which producer, about what it takes to recoup. And they were talking about bringing Julie Andrews in with Victor Victoria, and Blake Edwards was producing it, and he said, well, she'll come in for 9 months and she'll go away. And he's going, well, you don't understand. And their budget was all wrong. He said, once Julie Andrews leaves that play, your money is going away. And they had to completely rewrite the budget so that they could recoup their money before Julie Andrews
and
left.
And they tried really hard with Raquel Welch, and it didn't quite have the same.
Not the same thing. But it's interesting, and one of the other things that's very different about the two theaters that Angels in America are coming into is Angels in America was a very deep stage, and the stage they're going into, and I'm forgetting which theater they're going into. Do you know?
I don't.
It's in here somewhere.
I don't remember.
Oh, okay. anyway, so that's it. The other thing about M. Butterfly that's scaring people in is it's Julie Taymor's return, and she ain't cheap. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's
and they're definitely that. Like I was about to make a bad joke about people being afraid of butterflies, but it just it landed flat in my head.
Well, the
landed...
reason why it's so hard to recoup your money on doing that show is butterflies are free.
Well, and Julie Andrews should stay away from flying objects. Whoa! I'm sorry, that was tacky. I'm sorry.
Okay, speaking of London, and this has got to just be killer. Hamilton was set to open in December on the West End. And oddly enough, sold out through 2018. They're postponing their opening by 2 weeks because of the renovations on the theater. So here you are. You have you've decided to buy tickets for opening night. You spent $1,400 for those tickets. And now you are... SOL,
not going.
Well, no, they have set aside tickets. They had set aside tickets for each performance for things that would come up. So there are tickets to be gotten, but most of the people, like one person said that they can't change their airline. They have like, you know, $1,000 seat airline tickets, hotel, all this stuff. There were some interesting tweets. one was from Janie Gibson, the editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed UK, says the first person to say "wait for it" gets a smack in the face. Wait for it being a song from the show. She said she cannot pick her new performance, cannot select new seats. All I can do is fill in a form and wait up for 10 days for a response. Currently not happy.
I feel great sympathy. Anyone who's done a renovation on your home, or like, let alone, as you know, Lisa, in the thick of getting, you are at the mercy of contractors, and yep. I feel very bad. These producers have been people of great integrity who have worked with Lin-Manuel Miranda to stop these sort of ticket bots, to really make tickets more accessible for their base. So I feel like they're kind of stuck in a place with a contractor. How many times have we all been there, right? Where you can't speed up this work. So my sympathies go out, and I'm sure that they will continue to deal with this with integrity.
Big time, big time, big time. So yeah, I want to make sure that I'm mindful of time. There's a really cool thing. Uma Thurman's coming back to Broadway. Mm-hmm. Woohoo! Whoop whoop! With The Parisian. Which takes place in Washington, D.C. It's written by the guy, Beau Willimon, who wrote House of Cards and Frank Underwood. And it has a political bend to it. But what's interesting about this is he's going to stick around. He's going to update the script every week.
Isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah. So Trump tweets something on Monday. It's in the next week's show on Tuesday.
Don't you want to be that stage manager? That's fun. Like, hey, guys, sorry. You've got to come in now. Now. Trump hates red. Trump hates the color red. Come in now.
I'll tell you, that's... That's back in the old days. It's like doing it in the old days. Mean Girls the Musical.
Exciting.
So excited. Are and you? I'm usually not about this kind of cotton candy, but it's cotton candy with Tina Fey.
It's Tina Fey.
No, it's Mean Girls.
Produced baseball. By Lorne Michaels, who's never produced, who's produced two Broadway shows. One, he produced Gilda in the 70s, and he produced another one-person show with somebody else. But it's coming to, no, it's coming to the August Wilson Theater. Preview start March 12th.
Let me tell you, those three girls are really funny, too. Kate Rockwell, Taylor Lauterman, and Ashley Park. Those girls are silly. They're super, super silly.
You know who else is silly? My dog. She's silly.
She's silly.
She's silly. So I don't know. I'm not all that familiar with the movie. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know it existed. I just thought I was on a bicycle team for an AIDS ride, and we called ourselves the Mean Girls, and we were all named Heather. And I thought that my friend who came up with those names using air quotes was just being very clever. And then I
call her and tell her she's not that clever.
Yeah, he isn't, but she'd appreciate that. And the other thing I just want, this is on our website. When I post the show, it'll be there. We talked about As You Like It last week and the week before, the New York Public Works Project. Mm-hmm. There's a video of it. Did you see it, Nicole?
Yes.
Amazing.
Very, very
It
cool.
just looks amazing. It brought tears to my eyes. It's shot really beautifully and richly, and you see all these people. And as we talked about last week, the thing that made this thing cool, the cast of 200 non-professionals mostly, is it looked like New York City. There was, you know, it was a hodgepodge of different faces, ages, and colors. And the video shows that. It's awesome.
If you remember the 80s, you could call that a United Colors of Benetton ad.
You could. That'd be the company.
Someone
put my
the other
parents
day
out of business.
Asked me what that was. I was like, "Oh no, I'm old."
The last thing I'll do, and this is on the website as well, is there's just an interesting thing that Playbill put out with shows that opened and closed on the same day.
I saw that. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Which is there's 25 of them in this list, and interestingly enough, I applied or I was interviewed for and did not get the job on Broadway Follies. That was one that opened and closed one day. So I dodged that bullet. That's some good things about not getting...
I'm actually surprised.
Here's the Harvey
only
ad. It was taped to this one.
I'm surprised it's only 25, to be honest.
No, no, no. That's not all of them.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Just on this
I was
list.
Like, there's only 25? Okay. They just had 25.
Anyway, we're going to go take a little break, I think, if these things haven't gone to sleep, and indeed they have. We're going to take a little break. And we are playing a little song coming out from Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. Here we go. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We've been talking to folks from Ground Floor Theater and The Vortex. You know, it just dawned on me. Normally I do that little spiel where I talk about who's on the show. But I didn't do that because the music didn't play.
No.
So I guess I should tell everybody in hindsight that on the show today is the Vortex Rep and their show Vampires by Chad Salvata and Ground Floor Theater with their show Gibberish Mostly by Max Langer. But
you introduced the people.
I did introduce
you did.
The peeps.
I remember saying hi. I was like, you got the people.
I introduced the people, but I did not put you in context.
Oh.
So that's, and that's the story of a hard-hitting journalist. That's the job of a hard-hitting journalist like us.
Lisa, your work during the hurricane, covering the hurricane out in front of the hotels in South Beach was amazing. Your hair looks great.
Did you like that thing where the wind almost knocked me over?
She's a wind tunnel at home. She practices.
Julie Lenard, I need you to holler something out for me right now. I normally do this during the break, but we show how the sausage is made here on Offstage and On the Air. Can you give me a number between 2 and 53? Really loud.
37.
Okay. Now, Vampirus. This is your, I think, it's at least your second time to be on this show for this show. Maybe even three. So this is a remounting of a show you've done twice before called Vampirus, and it was written by Chad Salvata. So Chad, why don't you tell folks a little bit about the show?
Well, let's let Bonnie. Yeah.
Chad has some esoteric things that he wants to share.
Yes, we discussed that.
Practically, was this show on 7 years ago?
It was on in 2010, but
yes, we've been on for 10 years.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah, great. Yeah. Well, maybe I guess we were. I don't.
I remember it distinctly.
The three of us have been on for a number of different shows that are the collaborations between the Vortex and Ethos, which is Chad's vision and creation. So Chad makes these amazing large scale works that can't possibly fit in our tiny theater. And then we figure out how to make them the most spectacular thing that you can possibly imagine. So we're super excited to do Vampirus again, starring the amazing Melissa Vogt and Betsy McCann Bromley. So excited to have the two originators of those roles back. And then a bunch of new people, brand new costumes, brand new set. We had to buy all new plywood. I mean, that does not happen very often.
No, it does not.
it's just a spectacular Gothic opera, all sung, all original, and it's the story of Erzsébet Báthory, the Bloody Countess of Hungary, who it's based on a true story. She was a woman who killed hundreds of young women and bathed in their blood.
Oh, my.
So she's kind of a cult figure.
So why now in the month of October would you do this piece?
I can't imagine that there's some kind of Halloween connection, but
you guys
Halloween.
Are smart.
I mean, you guys are, you know. Yeah.
What are you talking about? It's a light and fuzzy tale. Heartwarming, unicorns and rainbows.
I was just about to say rainbows and unicorns.
So Melissa, what role do you play?
I play Erzsébet Báthory, the Bloody Countess.
You are the Bloody Countess, and do you get all physically bloody in this? Is there actual blood?
I do. There's lots of blood. In fact, a shower of blood.
Oi.
Bathe in it.
Lovely.
Yes. Any show with water budget, fire budget, or blood budget is a good time.
Oh, yes.
So, Chad, you wanted to share a piece from the liner notes or the program notes of the show?
This is from the preface of the libretto. Erzsébet Báthory is a space and not merely a distant historical figure to be betrayed. In this sphere is the inexhaustible black hole of vanity from which all sorcery originates and to every prey is devoured. Black magic, the poetic technology of narcissism, possesses the necessary tools to navigate through Erzsébet's exuberant, insatiable hunger. Enhancement of physical beauty and fear of the body's decay are the primal mania within us all.
Ooh.
Primal mania. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the music that you get to sing in this piece. Is this original composition? How does this come to be?
Yes, I did. I'm the composer. I did It's All Original, and I composed and performed all the music. It is pre-recorded, but the voices are live.
Amazing.
And we happen to have, that's a very good segue, we happen to have a little piece that we can hear a little sample of, yes?
Yes.
And this is track 4.
It's called Queen Mirror.
Okay. Do we need anything to set it up, or are we just going to let it play?
This is Melissa singing as she draws the fairy Deli Bob through the magic mirror.
Oh my. Well, hopefully I'm choosing the right CD player. We will find out right now. Amazing music. And
yes.
And that, Melissa, that is you singing, correct?
It is me singing.
How awesome is that? Yeah. What a lovely voice. So this is sung live. So we've got a recording here, but you're actually going to be singing this live.
Absolutely.
So my question, when folks do opera, typically they are not mic'd. Are you guys mic'ing yourselves?
We are mic'd.
You are mic'd.
And the sound is rich and full. We brought in Roy Taylor to create the sound design in the theater. And everybody will have a mic. The mics are embedded in the costumes. They're like lapel mics. So they're in your headpiece, in your hat. And it picks them up enough to be able to blend with the pre-recorded score.
Awesome. I'm going to take a quick tangent here. We had asked Julie Lenard to choose a number between 2 and 52, and I believe she chose 34. If not, that's the one I brought up. So that's the one
that, close enough,
that we're going to listen to. So let's see what you chose.
Hi, I'm Audrey.
And I'm Lori.
And we're the Radio City Rockettes.
And you're...
And just for kicks, you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP, Hornsby, Austin, 91.7 FM.
So good the first time. All right, sorry.
Okay. We have not had them on for a while. It's good. Good choice, Julie Lenard.
They're straight cute. One. We haven't had that one in a while.
Yeah, yeah. We got the straight one. I like the ones where I, because, you know, we let the sausage be shown even in there. So how does it feel, Melissa? Actually, all of you, this is the same team. And Bonnie, you're directing
yes.
this? How's it feel? So this is the third time to mount this. And as you said before, you're on the air, the penultimate, so we're going to get one more mounting.
I don't know. I think this is the last time.
I'm just teasing you. How does it feel to come back and re-look at this piece? And other than, I'm assuming, other than the scenery and the costumes, you're making some other changes as we've gone along. How's the process been for the third time?
It's been intense. The character's very dark. And I feel like these are dark times that we're living in. And also, you know, I was 24 when we first did this show, and now I'm 36. And yeah, you know, it might not sound like a huge span of time, but I've lived a little bit in between. And
there is a huge difference between 24 and 36
so much
in terms
as a
of
person.
Yes,
right, right. So.
Unless you're me, I'm exactly as I was when I was 24.
You know, it's all that bathing in blood. You just, you know, stay beautiful.
It keeps you young.
Oh,
I know that whenever I want a good beauty treatment, it's blood.
Just blood. Just showers of blood.
I think the big excitement for me is in figuring out how to tell the story better than we've ever told it before and clarifying things that maybe weren't exactly clear or enhancing moments between the characters that were always superficial, making them more... you know, deepening those things. And it's been really exciting to work with Betsy and Melissa again, you know, as they know these characters so well, but they're finding new things. And we brought in Sandy Donzica as a choreographer, and she's been working with us on really creating some great movement. And we've got new virgins who appear.
You have to replace them.
Micah and Amanda, who, you know, they're appearing naked, but they're dancing and they're getting blood, and they're doing all the things. I think Amanda dies on stage 6 times in the show. So
recycles.
I mean, how awesome is that?
Yes, it's 7 women that play all the female and male characters.
Okay. Cool.
So yeah, Chelsea Montessori and Aaron Geddes are playing men. They're playing the king and Count Thurzo. So, but you know, it's really a part of the concept of the show that Chad wrote, and it works really well for this show.
Chad, have you done any work with the libretto and score for this version?
I didn't change anything.
Okay.
But I did, at this time, finally design the costumes.
Oh.
Yeah, well, at least I did drawings for the costumes. They're being actually
I think
constructed
that counts
by
as
other people.
Design.
Yes, it does.
I'm gonna give you credit for that.
Well, yeah, he's working with Stephanie Dunbar on the costumes, and she's manifesting his thoughts.
So were they always thoughts when you originally wrote this piece, or the same type of vision you had seeing these characters when you originally wrote it, or do you kind of see them a little bit different in your head?
I think especially by this third production, this is really... the way I see them. This is really manifesting the way I envisioned it in the first place.
That's cool.
Very, awesome. Very excited.
Well, we are running out of time. Tell us when you open, how long you play for, and where people can get more information.
We open on Friday the 22nd, and we play for a month through September 21st. And you can go to vortexrep.org, and there are tickets and more information there.
Through October 21st.
I'm sorry.
Awesome. What'd you say? September 21st?
September 22nd through October 21st. So
it's all about Peace Day.
For a month.
For a month. Well, awesome. We're so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you for having us.
And I look forward to seeing this production. And so that was Bonnie Cullum, Chad Salvata, and Melissa Vogt of Vortex Rep's production of Vampirus by Chad Salvata. It is playing at the Vortex from September 22nd through October 21st. For more information, vortexrep.org. And we are going to go out with a little piece of music from the show.
Such an ancient tale burns like a fire in me. Blossoms from the deep to kiss the heavenly.
And we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
It's so weird. My headphones... I turn them down when there's music on because the music is really loud in relation to the voice. And so when I come back on and I haven't turned that back up, I can't hear myself. So I don't think people are listening to me.
We're listening. We're listening.
Hearing you.
All right. So I want to just talk about local. There's a couple of local things that I found very, very interesting that's going on.
Tell us, Lisa.
I'm now stalling right now because I'm in the process of playing engineer and pulling out a CD to get
where
to Chelsea
Bottom.
Thank
arms.
You, guys. So what did I want to talk about? First of all, you know, I was just reminded as I looked at Now Playing Austin that so many of the improv theaters here, and we support four theaters. That's the Institution Theater, the New Movement Theater, Merlin Works at Zach, and... the one right over here, Cold Town, and then Five, the one on 6th Street.
Oh, Esther's
Follies. No, not Esther's Follies. It's not an improv. Anyway, I'll come up with it. But what's interesting about those and what made me think about this, and Merlin Works is offering a free Improv 101. All of these companies who teach classes offer a free introductory class. And I would encourage everybody to give that a shot because it is... who here... So we're here, there's... six of us now here in the studio. Has anybody other than me taken improv?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. So everybody but Holly. Holly, that's your... Oh. Holly Garrison didn't take improv, but now she will because that's her homework. Improv is such a great thing, and you do not need, nor should, in many cases, should you be a theater person to be able to benefit from improv.
Or a funny person,
right. Improv is not necessarily funny.
People think that improv is just for those people who are clever or funny or witty, and it's not.
But what it does good, especially if you're a business person, a salesperson, a marketing person, it gives you tools to help you think on your feet. It gives you that tool, that thing that we've all hear, yes and, is really important out there in the world and not cutting people down, but supporting them.
It's also a really great tool for presence and mindfulness. Someone to be present, like you don't have to be funny, you just have to be present. So it's a really great thing for business leaders, someone in leadership positions in their job, a mom, a dad, anyone. It's a great thing as a tool for mindfulness and presence.
Yeah, and so we
sound like my therapist.
I was just quoting mine.
I was trying to think of something clever, but I couldn't. And this is why I need to go back to improv class.
You don't have to be clever, Lisa, just be present.
But like I said, we have these theaters here that offer these out. It's something that's worthy of doing. Folks should know that next to New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, we're the next biggest market in the United States for improv. Mm. We have a huge market here. We have, I think it just finished. If it didn't just finish, it's just about to start the Out of Bounds Festival, which is a pretty large improv festival. And then, of course, there is the Moon Tower Festival. So there's lots of stuff going on. So just Google Improv Austin. Go get yourself an improv class. They offer these classes, these 101 classes, usually for nothing, and you can go and do that, and it would be fun. And then report back on our Facebook page.
Yeah,
Tell us what you thought.
I like that.
So the other thing I saw that caught my eye today was Catch Me If You Can, the musical, at the McCollum Fine Arts Academy. So this is a really good thing to support our high schools and the work they're doing. Max, are your kids high school age yet?
One of them just started high school, yeah.
What high school?
It's you called have... Lhasa. It's on
oh, you're at Lhasa. Yeah, right above LBJ.
Great school.
Yeah. So need to get. We need to support our high school students, especially in the arts. And what they're, well, you need, not especially in the arts, also in the arts, along with the arts, everything's important.
You're only supporting the arts children, Lisa.
Screw everybody else. Well, I don't like STEM, I want arts.
Well, you know what we're doing? We're putting the A in STEAM, the arts. Science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. We're putting the A, it's really important. And this in a state like Texas, we've got to talk about it. In a state like Texas, we've got to talk about it.
Thank you, Mr. Nick Mayo. You are.
Otherwise, it won't happen.
Now, in a state like Texas, what should we do?
We got to talk about it.
Got to talk about it. Got it. All right, let's go to Today in Theater History. Dun, dun, dun.
Today in Theater History.
In what?
In history.
Okay, that's the theme song. Changes every week. In 1903, Max, you remember this?
It's a cold year.
It's the birthday of one Claudette Colbert, who's not really known for theater so much as film. But she did do late life Broadway appearances in the Kingfisher, and Aren't We All?
Aren't we?
We are. In 1978, the On Golden Pond debuts off Broadway.
You big poop.
I'm speechless.
That's what she says in the movie.
I've never seen
Norman, you're gonna get back on that horse and ride, ride, ride. You big poop.
You big poop.
You don't know that?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh, I was the only little gay kid in the sixth grade who would say that all the time.
I
think I still own it on VHS, which is
me
scary.
Too.
I have been to the pond, which is in Franconia, New Hampshire.
Was it golden?
It was golden. Oh, my. 1983, Mr. Yul Brynner plays his 4,000th performance in what role?
Driving Miss Daisy.
That's it. Thank you. Okay, but we know that was King and I. For extra credit, what theater was he playing in? And it was not in New York. It's my favorite theater to say the name of.
The Pantages.
The Pantages. Which I don't know if you remember, about 4 years ago, they tried to change the name of the Pantages.
They did.
They did not.
But you caused a riot. You came out with pitchforks.
All our followers rioted. Yes.
She chained herself to the building.
I did. So this is sort of a sad thing. This is back in 1988 when times were hard.
Yeah.
Andrew Lloyd Webber had to put a 17-room Manhattan duplex up for sale.
Oh.
He said, I wanted something a bit smaller and quieter and a little more low-key. He's from the poorer sections of London, really is.
He needs a Henry Higgins.
He said, more porridge, please.
He says, more porridge, please. That poor Andrew Lloyd Webber. Speaking of Andrew Lloyd Webber, and...
Is he a sir or a lord? I always forget.
He's lord.
He's lord.
He's lord. He's lord. That's right. So Lord Webber and Lord Olivier and Sir Gilgood and all these people that have been knighted, they've always been... You usually use their title before their name. But when they talked about, I just totally lost the name. Who passed away? Royal Shakespeare?
Peter Hall.
Peter Hall. They never call him Sir Hall. He's knighted as well. So there you go.
I call him Sir Hall.
Okay. I call him Deck the Hall.
I call him Deck the Hall.
Okay. In 2001, after the, so this is the, what's the date? The 13th right now? So 2 days after 9/11, the mayor, Giuliani, really urged the Broadway shows to relight tonight. So they came back on board on this night in 2001 to do it. And also interesting, I didn't realize this, Stephen Sondheim was planning an opening of Assassins, which they canceled.
Yes.
Yeah, he did cast Assassins. Yeah. But some of the shows did open before September
They were closed for two
days.
Oh,
not 2000. I'm talking about the year afterwards. It's the same year. Never mind. We're talking 01.
We're talking about actually when.
Yeah, actually 01. Yeah. That's why I said never mind.
So this is also the date in 2009 where normally shows go from either on the road to Broadway or off Broadway to Broadway. A little show called Avenue Q went the other direction.
She went from the Broadway to the off-Broadway?
To the off-Broadway, and yeah. And so many others have followed suit.
New World Stages.
Yep, New World Stages. Rent has done it. A lot of shows have done it, and they find whole new lives there.
To great success, man.
Yes, to great success.
To great success.
I totally forgot about this, and I'm sure that that you all remembered it, but Bull Durham, the musical?
I tried to forget.
Totally didn't remember.
I did.
It was only 3 years ago. Will Swinson, Melissa Errico, and John Bellman, not on Broadway, but at the Alliance in Atlanta, mm-hmm. Didn't make it. Mm-mm. All right.
There was nothing bullish about that bull. Mm.
Let's see.
But I will say that is a great movie.
There you go. Birthdays. Herbert Berghoff, 1909. There you go. Anybody go to HB Studios for classes?
My old roommate, Agustina from Argentina. You know Agustina.
She went to HB.
That's how I met her because she was in New York.
Your very good friend, Roald Dahl. It's his birthday today.
Oh.
Uma Sumac.
I don't know Uma.
Oh, I do. Nell Carter.
Oh, my God.
Give them what they want, and when they want it,
make a mess for more. Dude, I saw her play Miss Hannigan in Annie. Whatever last thing she did, that revival like 20 years ago. Oh.
Christine Ebersole.
Wrong.
Oh. Christine Estabrook. Not even close.
Wished it was Ebersole because I kind of love her.
And locally, Victoria Kelly's birthday today.
Hello, and happy birthday.
Bon anniversaire, as my friend Nicole says. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Ground Floor Theater and their show Gibberish Mostly. And this is from Catch Me If You Can. And
is it my man, Aaron Tveit? Did you pick a song with him?
I have two songs in here with Aaron Tveit, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Well, I hope you picked one with him, because he's kind of everything.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if it's actually queued up. Here we go.
Two little mice of great renown.
And we're back. This is Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
And our guests here at Offstage and On the Air, we are so fortunate to have Ground Floor Theater and their production of Gibberish Mostly by Max Langert. In the studio, we have Max Langert. Say hi, Max.
Hello.
Julie Lennard.
Hello.
Holly Garrison.
Hi.
And producer and artistic director of Ground and founder of Ground Floor Theater, the lovely Lisa Sheps.
Hello. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, Lisa, we're so happy you're here.
Never done this before.
I'm so pleased to be on the show. I think this is my first time to be a guest.
I don't know, but you cleared some time in your schedule, and that really means a lot to us.
Oh, well, and it is.
We're really glad you're here. So, Lisa, I want to start with you real quick. For those of our listeners who might live under a rock or not have access to running water, tell us a little bit about Ground Floor Theater.
Well, Ground Floor Theater's mission is to produce works by and for underrepresented communities. We opened in 2015, and we've been around since 2014, but we opened our venue in 2015, and then, as most folks know, in 2016, the city shut us down because of some permitting issues, which we've been fighting, and we are now, gratefully, after a year and a half, going to be opening a week from tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Woo! Thank you.
That's really, really fantastic, and I'm happy that we have you back. I'm interested to know a little bit about Gibberish Mostly. Max, I want to get to you to talk about your play. Tell us a little bit about the story and where you are in the development of this piece. Is this a premiere? Talk to us a bit about where you are in your artistic process with this play.
Sure. I wrote a draft of this play some years back, and this is a premiere. It's the first time it's being produced. I had a couple of readings of it a few years back, but have done work on it to sort of bring it up to date and worked with Lisa on some rewrites before this production. And so that's sort of the history of it. It's a play about a family dealing with a daughter who has severe autism. And the idea behind the play was that the daughter can't really communicate with the parents in a traditional way. And so the idea was sort of take it and look at it from her point of view and sort of the world that she's in versus the world that the parents are in.
So, Lisa, if I'm inferring, you talked about Ground Floor Theater being a theater company for the underrepresented. With that, your choice, am I correct in thinking that your choice of this play to open your theater is for the underrepresented being the autistic community?
Right.
Or one talk to me a little bit about why you chose this piece.
One of the communities that we really feel strongly about representing here are the differently abled community. And by differently abled, that spans a whole group of people, not only people with physical things that show them that have different abilities than others, but also people that have developmental disabilities, mental disabilities. And so, yeah, so this was specifically around autism. And autism is it's not a disease, but it's a
disorder.
It's a disorder. Thank you. I lost the word. is a disorder that not many people understand. We're really just now getting a better understanding of autism and what it means and how these people that deal with this communicate and deal with the world.
And Max, would you say that this piece helps an audience destigmatize something like autism? Tell me a little bit about your goals with writing this piece.
Well, I think there's some autobiographical elements of the story, and so actually, you know, I just have spent a lot of time thinking about what it must be like to be in that world where you can't really convey your thoughts and emotions in a sort of traditional way. So the idea behind the play was to sort of get at what must be going through someone's head or what might be going through someone's head and sort of give that person a personality and sort of a life that you don't necessarily see when you just see them in sort of the real world.
Awesome. Holly and Lisa, tell me a little bit about the roles. Holly, what role do you play?
I play Penny, and she comes in initially as an aide to help Nicole take care of her parents, but in actuality, she is not. She's Nicole's doll.
okay. And what about you, Julie? What role do you play?
I play Nicole, the one with autism. Mm-hmm. And I have all these conversations with Penny, my doll. She's my stalwart, the person that's always there with me. There's no communication with the parents whatsoever. It's kind of like we face each other, but there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. So everything I'm trying to get out, unfortunately, the doll takes the brunt of it. Hmm.
The challenge here for this piece is to find a way to show the challenges that families go through with non-communicative children with autism and what they have to go through and the difficult choices they make. And this is all presented in this very sort of fantasy-filled way where we have a lot of fun with the characters, but we also deal with some of the serious issues that happen in a family. So these autism can literally tear a family apart. In many cases, these parents make decisions that are really, really, really difficult. And we grapple with that subject here in this play.
And I will say that for our listeners who don't know, Lisa is also the director of the piece, as well as the founder of Ground Floor Theater and the artistic director. So she's also the director of this piece. Lisa, I know you guys have a scene that you want to do.
We do.
Did you want to set that up, or would you like to set it up, Max? Either way.
Lisa should do it. I don't really know what they're doing. So
yeah, I didn't tell Max which scene we're doing. So this is one of the periods in the times in the piece where all four characters in it. There's Nicole and Penny, and then there's the parents, Dan and Rosie. And they're all basically on stage, but they cannot communicate. So what we are hearing is the conversation between Nicole and Penny talking about the parents in many ways.
So this is Ground Floor Theater and the production of Gibberish Mostly by Max Langert. And we have Holly Garrison and Julie Lennard.
I wonder what's going on inside their heads. Thoughts and ideas all twisted around. Intangible to us.
They're in their own world.
Aren't you curious to know what goes on in there?
Of course I am.
Do they ever talk?
If you can call it that, it's gibberish mostly.
What have they said?
I don't remember.
Have they said your name?
I think so. I've heard them say things that sound familiar anyway.
Does it happen often?
Once in a while. I'm pretty sure I heard my mom say Nikki once.
That's endearing.
It's a whore's name.
It's your mom. She means well.
I guess.
I like them.
You do?
Yes. They're genuine, earnest people.
They're zombies.
I have a good sense for people.
Give it time.
Dan here, he's a thinker. His mind's always moving. He has ideas, plans we don't know about. Your mother, she's a thinker too, but she's more vision-oriented.
Vision-oriented?
Her ideas come in patterns and images. Your dad is more concrete, more of a right-angle person.
Sounds like you've got him pretty well pegged.
It's a start.
Well, how about me? What kind of person am I?
You're easy. Impatient, brooding, close-minded.
Is that it?
Those are your strong suits.
And that's where we have to stop.
Wow.
That was awesome.
Max, I'm excited to see this piece for many, many, many reasons.
Thank you.
And I'm so happy that Austin has the opportunity to see your play and that Ground Floor Theater gets to be the harbinger for this piece.
Me too.
And we just got to roll away. Austin Modern News is coming next. You can see Ground Floor Theater at Ground Floor Theater, 979 Springdale, from September 21st through September 30th. More information is at groundfloortheater.org. As promised, see you next week. And we're going to go around with whatever. Just whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever means that wasn't accidental. If whatever means you want to hold.
Okay, the curtain has just come
hand.
Down on Hopefully Fire, the musical. It's the story of a fire brigade that goes around and inspects buildings so that they can open up. And the particularly mean fire captain that picks on poor, undeserving little theater companies. We finished the show. We've gone backstage. We are outside the stage door amongst the dumpsters here at the theater. And we are fortunate enough to have been joined by Holly Garrison. Hi, Holly.
Hello.
Julie Lenard.
Hello.
And Max Lengert.
Hey there.
Why am I not hearing you? Try it. Try it now.
Hello
there.
There
you are.
Woo.
I got to do the, you know, you'd think I've just learned how to do this. So it's mic three that's not on. Okay, perfect. So before we, normally here at Backstage at Offstage, we'd like to talk to you about you. But since we just finished talking to you about Gibberish Mostly, and it's at Ground Floor Theater, and that's the theater that I run, we're going to talk a little bit more about Gibberish Mostly, just to start this off, and then we'll segue over to you guys. When we're on the radio, since I can't really talk about my theater too much there because it is a conflict of interest, but here on the podcast, I can say whatever the hell I want.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes.
So I just want to remind everybody that Gibberish Mostly opens a week from Thursday on the 21st. It plays only 2 weeks. You have 7 chances to see this amazing cast written by an amazing playwright. Directed by an okay director, and at this beautiful theater that's reopening. So the other thing that I can say here, but I couldn't say over the airways, is Ground Floor Theater is always pay what you want. So we have a suggested ticket price of $25, but you don't have to pay that.
Cool.
You can pay 10. You can pay 5. You can pay nothing.
Wow.
We want to make sure that everybody that wants to see theater gets to see theater.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, that's so great.
So that's the scoop. And so, Julie and Holly, how have I? Feels odd me asking you these questions since I'm directing, but other than we can leave the direction out of it. How have you found this experience so far in dealing with, you know, as we were talking about it with Nick, it's like, yeah, we're dealing with some heavy stuff here. How's that been for you guys?
For me personally, playing a doll, but not a doll, because I really represent of Nicole.
Mum's the word on the doll.
Oh, excuse me.
It's okay. They didn't hear it. Nobody listens happened. To the show.
That's wrong. For me, it's finding parts of Nicole figuring things out with Nicole, what's going on, because she does kind of figure out sort of what's going on with her parents not being able to talk to her. And for me, it's trying to find moments where I can bridge those gaps. And that's really challenging because my character is a little bit more cognizant, knows what's going on.
She's the smartest person in the world, I believe, according to her.
According to her, yeah.
Julie, what about you?
Well, I couldn't ask for a better scene partner. I mean, Holly's the best.
Aww. PDA, so sweet. As we used to call it. Pretty damn amazing.
Pretty damn amazing.
But all you guys are pretty damn amazing. The show is a challenge, and one of the things that, and I guess I benefit here in this interview in that I know the show so well, but Max has such a way of writing words that have rhythm and a pulse. So talk about that. And most of the pieces I've seen by you have that same kind of rhythm.
Okay. You want me to talk about that?
Other I than do.
Just accept your flattery. I don't know. That's a good question. I guess I come from a sort of musical family, so maybe I attribute it to that. I played the drums in high school and stuff, so maybe there's some of that there. But I really do like I do have a sort of fast-paced kind of. I like things to move. I like. I can't stand it when things go too slowly, and so I sort of just have that kind of rhythm and pacing, I guess, going on in my head, and I do feel it when I'm writing, and I think that I want people to be able to read something and kind of feel it move without having it be acted.
Right. Well, the last thing I will say is that folks should come to a Ground Floor Theater. We can't compel you to go, so you must go to Ground Floor Theater. Price is not an option, an obstacle to you coming to see the show. So make sure you go to groundfloortheater.org and get yourself some tickets and come and see us, because we're reopening, and that's an important thing for Austin Theater. So, switching gears to talk to you guys about you. Julie Lenard, when we were talking earlier, I don't know whether it was on the air or before the show, you went to middle school here in Austin. So that makes me think that you are from Austin.
Yes, I am.
Born and bred?
No, I was born in McAllen in the Rio Grande Valley, mm-hmm. and then we moved up here.
Listeners of this show will know that I toured with a production of The Wizard of Oz in 1974 and played McAllen, Texas.
Wow.
Well,
yeah. Well, guess what role I played? Anybody? Not Dorothy. I'll just tell you right
Scarecrow?
Now.
Scarecrow?
No. God, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Lion.
No, you only Toto.
No way.
No.
I play Toto. I play Toto for 6 months. Yep. I had this big football helmet head and I rolled around on my knees. And I barked.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I had no lines, but I did bark. So you grew up in McAllen. Did you do theater in McAllen?
No, because we moved here pretty soon after I was born.
Okay. Were you an infant when you moved here?
I was 5.
Okay. So that's not really an infant. That's a little toddler.
A little toddler.
Kid.
So when you were an infant, how much did you weigh? Inside joke. That's from the play. Yeah. So how did you find yourself getting involved in theater?
I'd always been involved since kindergarten.
Uh-huh. Which is at 5.
Which is at 5. There were camps, and I would go to the camps.
Did your parents, were they in theater? Did they send you to camps?
They sent me to camps because they wanted me to have something to do. My mom was in acting when she was in high school. So she knew what that was like, and I was always so expressive and running around and acting out things, and they were like, let's put her in something that she can do that with.
Let's get her somewhere she can express herself. Did you go to college for theater?
Yes, I did.
What school?
Sam Houston State University.
Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, right?
Yeah. Home of Death Row.
Yeah. Were you in prison there?
Almost.
I did. Oh my God. Did you go to the? I went to. Me and a friend went to the prison museum and saw Old Hickory or whatever they call it. We're so proud of killing people here in the state.
Oh God.
So cool. And so then straight from Sam Houston to Austin.
Back
to Austin, I guess.
Back to Austin for a year. And I did some costume work at the State Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, what am I doing
back
here?
Back when Michelle Polgar was running it? Not Michelle Polgar. Or was it Michelle Polgar?
I don't know.
Who am I? Was it Michelle Polgar? It was somebody else.
It's been so long.
Back before the flood.
Back before the flood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then I said, screw it. I'm going to New York.
Okay.
And I'm going to make it.
I'm going to make it in New York.
Oh.
So you went to New York. Where'd you live?
I went to New York. I lived on the upper west side in Hamilton Heights.
Where did you live? What street?
143rd and Broadway.
Okay. I lived on 162nd Riverside for 11 years.
Nice.
Yes. So Hamilton Broadway is a little further north, 168th and Broadway. Yeah, there you go. That's because that's where I live. Well, that's cool. How long did you spend in New York?
6 years.
6 years. Mm-hmm. And always up in, I would call 145th and Broadway sort of upper Harlem. It's on the upper ends of the Harlem. And before you get to Washington Heights, which starts at around 155th Street. Did you always live there?
I lived there 4 years. My last 2 years, I lived alone in a studio at 141 and Malcolm X.
Okay. Oh. When I lived in New York, if you were a skin color of mine, you did not live in that area.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You could spot me.
Okay, what?
You could spot me.
I did. Holly, you or Max, did y'all ever live in New York?
No. Only visited.
Visited. You said that like it's a bad thing.
No, not at all. I would love to.
Okay.
You know?
You could do it.
Maybe I will. Actually, I had my... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you go. I had
my tarot cards read recently, and she said I should move East Coast or West Coast.
There you go. I vote for the East Coast. I'm an East Coast girl. What about you, Max?
East Coast is big. I lived there for about 3.5 years.
Uh-huh.
I lived in Woodside, Queens for a while, and then I lived on the East, like 90th and 3rd Avenue for a little while, and then I actually had this amazing place at 84th and Broadway.
There you go. That's my part of the city. The Upper West is my favorite part. So what brought you into... So you're... I know you as a playwright. Have you ever been a performer?
I actually started performing. Well, I had a little things here and there, and then I started performing at Frontera Fest a few years ago, just because I wanted to try it out. And,
did you perform your own stuff?
I did. Yeah, okay. I think I can only do my own stuff. Really. I really my range of acting ability is about, and I'm holding my fingers 2 inches apart. I write for myself. It's great, and it's really good. I get incredibly nervous, and then it goes, you know, and then I get really happy at the end of it. It's very.
Were you doing short French stuff or long
French
stuff?
Yeah, short French stuff.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool. And so what got you into playwriting?
What got me into that? I actually had a friend who's still my friend who is a musician.
Did
and
you say he's still not your friend?
He still is my friend.
Okay. That's a very strange thing to say.
I heard that too, Lisa.
So this guy, this enemy of mine, is a musician and he wanted, actually I was in a band with him in high school and he wanted to write a musical in college. And he was good at the music part, but not so good at the dialogue part. And so I told him, I collaborated with him. And that was a really good experience. We had something put on in college. And then I sort of stepped out on my own and thought, I bet I can just write something on my own. And sort of kept doing it.
And there was this history. You were very involved with ScriptWorks here in town.
I am. I've been a member for a long time. And I'm the member whip or member representative of ScriptWorks. So.
The member whip. I like that. I have not heard that term in relation to a artistic nonprofit. I love that. Well, cool. And so when did... So prior to writing this musical, you had no theatrical... Were you, as a kid, were you interested in theater?
That's funny you ask. Both my parents are musicians. And I would occasionally actually get cast. I got cast twice... once in elementary and once in, I think, junior high in a piece. Somebody just sought me out and said, hey, we think you'd be good in this play. And I was like, I don't even know why, but then I did it. So I got lucky.
Awesome.
So I guess there was an artistic side of me that
came. And at what age was that?
One was, once I was like 6 and then it happened again when I was like 13.
All right. Well, good. Well, we're happy you're out there writing.
Oh, good. Me too.
Awesome. What's in the future for you?
I'm going to do something for the Short Fringe at Frontera Fest again. And then I've actually gotten into storytelling, which is sort of, I like a little bit. So I'm doing a couple storytelling shows in the next 6 months.
Are you working? Because so, Bernadette Nason does storytelling. Are you with that group?
I'm not. I know Bernadette. I always think of her sort of on her own. I've been working with different groups that sort of pop up and have
well,
their own
shows. So. Well, we should talk because I want to host storytelling at Ground Floor Theater.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
So, all right, Holly, what's your story?
Once
upon a time.
Yes, I was born. I'm from a little tiny, tiny town just south of downtown Dallas.
Uh-huh.
I got started in theater I guess 12, 13.
What's the name of the little tiny town south of downtown
it's
Dallas?
It's called Ferris, Texas.
Ferris?
Ferris.
Okay,
yes.
Like a
right
Ferris wheel?
Right off 45. Yes, like okay. A Ferris wheel.
Mm-hmm. So right off 45. So right I off. Passed you when I would go to college from Houston to North Texas State.
Yeah. I was just really good at reading aloud,
uh-huh.
And I didn't have patience in class when they call on people to read to make sure they were paying attention, but then they were so slow to read. So I would always volunteer. And then my English teacher, who I would always volunteer for, her dad was the theater director of the high school. So she was like, hey, this girl's awesome. And then I really got into theater, went to college for it. And
where'd you go to college?
Tyler Junior College.
Tyler Junior College.
Tyler Junior
so you're
College.
A Tyler Rose.
East Texas.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. East Texas friendly. yeah, I had a good time there. I stayed there for 2 years. Then I moved back to Dallas for another year.
So you stayed in the Tyler area after college for two
no,
years?
No, 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 no. Okay. Just the 2 years I was in
oh
college.
My
gosh. No. I just got out.
So after college, you went mm-hmm. you went back to Dallas.
Yeah, and okay. Now I'm here in Austin.
So what, did most people consider Ferris as a suburb of Dallas or indeed as
no.
you described it?
No, it's really just a tiny podunk town okay. right
off
45.
Describing it mm-hmm. just south of downtown Dallas, it makes me think of a suburb.
No. This was country five.
Okay.
Tractors. I got stuck behind tractors going to school.
Were your parents farmers?
No. Not that country. My mom has chickens.
Okay.
Which I miss her fresh eggs.
Are they still there in Ferris?
Yeah, my mom is. My dad is nearby too.
Okay.
But my mom wants to move down to the hill country now.
Awesome.
She wants to follow me.
That's better. Well, who wouldn't? So let's try to after college, mm-hmm. you went to Dallas. Where did you do theater in Dallas?
I took an acting class, mm-hmm. a film acting class during that time. It was with
a
place
FAC,
called,
we call those.
It was called React Theater with Michelle Sherrill was her name. Mm-hmm. It was really, really fun. It was very different from anything I'd ever done because I had always done stage work. And
film is very different.
Yeah. The first time they recorded me, they said, I looked at the recording back and I said, whoa, I look insane. I look like a crazy person. My eyebrows are moving like, whoa. But yeah, it was really fun though and really interesting. And we did a lot of like partner work. So we had the same partner and we got really close.
So Austin does a fair amount of films. Does anybody here worked on Austin films?
No.
Okay, me neither. What about musicals? Anybody musicals?
I've only ever done one musical in my life.
Which was?
It was Sweeney Todd.
The Demon Barbara Fleet Street.
Yes.
That one?
Yes.
Never
heard
of it.
I was Mrs. Lovett.
Oh, you were?
I was. It was so fun.
How was that? That's a great role.
Right? It was really, really fun. Got to carry around fake dead legs and stuff.
That is not easy. I mean, that's not an easy musical to do.
Yeah.
I mean, to say you've only done one musical and it's like Sweeney Todd, that's
yeah, it was very difficult. And I did it was in college. And I had never done a musical, of course. And it was that was my first year to ever take vocal lessons and voice lessons. And it kicked my ass a little bit. But it ended up being so much fun and a really great experience, and I think it made me a better actor for sure.
Awesome. Well, I as a person who loves musicals, say you all should do more. You should
definitely.
Write a musical, Matt.
I am actually trying to write one for Frontera Fest.
there you go. Boom. For Frontera Fest, Short Fringe?
Yeah, the short one.
How many numbers do you put in a Short Fringe show?
Four.
Four?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the whole... How much time do you get?
25 minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can do that.
Can make it work.
Yeah.
We're
very
short.
Well, I'm so glad you guys were here backstage at the theater. We spend so much time on stage together that now it's nice to get on. I think it's funny that you guys are, and y'all haven't been out the stage door of the theater yet, have you? So when I describe the theater, I do this every show. I make up a musical and I say we've gone outside, we're among the dumpsters. But I'm indeed talking about ground floor theater. So the backstage door comes out onto a dock with a stairway downstairs, and indeed there are dumpsters. So you'll have to experience the backstage at ground floor theater. There you go.
Cool.
Well, thank you guys for joining us back here.
Thank you.
And we'll see you and break a leg on the show.
Woo!
Okay, bye.
By the sea, bring along your child.